Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Schnelle et al. Titled, In Vivo U13C Glucose Labeling to Assess Heart Metabolism in Murine Models of Pressure and Volume Overload. This article was published August 4th, 2020. Joining me today are Associate Editor Fabio Recchia, Lead Author and Associate Editor Ajay Shah, and experts Christoph Mack and Eduardo Bertero. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. The diseased heart displays an altered metabolism of free fatty acids, glucose, and lactate, which are the three main energy substrates. For decades, investigators have debated on the possible pathophysiological role of myocardial metabolic alterations in contributing to cardiac dysfunction and progressive failure. However, numerous questions remain open. Two of them are whether the alterations of myocardial substrate metabolism vary based on the etiology of cardiac disease, and whether they occur very early or they rather develop only when the heart is severely dysfunctional. To answer these questions, it is important to refine methods of investigation, since the simultaneous assessment of the myriad of metabolic pathways remains a major challenge. In this study, Schnelle and colleagues have utilized glucose uniformly labeled with the stable isotope C13 to determine the metabolic fate of glucose in mice with pressure overload or volume overload-induced cardiac hypertrophy. The hearts were then harvested and processed for C13 metabolite isotopomer analysis by nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy. This is the first time that C13 labeling and targeted metabolomic analysis by NMR was adopted in vivo in the two models of pathological cardiac stress. And the authors found an interesting difference between the pressure overload and the volume overload induced hypertrophy. Ajay, what are the key findings of your study? Can you tell us more about this?
Thank you very much, Fabio. So as you mentioned, metabolism is integrally linked to structural and functional changes that occur in the remodeling heart. And, you know, we were interested to implement this method of heavy carbon labeling in vivo. We found that there were significant changes that occurred in the pressure overload model of TAC, which we did not see in the volume overload model, considering that we matched the two models so that we had a similar extent of hypertrophy. And the main changes that we found were, first of all, an increase in glycolysis in pressure overload, evidence of increased flux into the TCA cycle, as evidenced by increased labeling of the TCA metabolite succinate. And then perhaps most interestingly, we also found evidence of increased generation of glutamine and aspartate, which, as you know, are not actually TCA metabolites. So in conclusion, in this study, first of all, we have established quite an interesting method to look at metabolism in vivo. And secondly, found some quite interesting differences between pressure overload and volume overload.
Thank you, Ajay. Christoph and Eduardo, what are the insights you gained from this study? The difference between the two models is interesting, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. The results are very interesting from the study, in particular since substrate utilization is such an important issue in the pathophysiology of heart failure. Because we know that the failing heart is energy deprived, we try to understand differences in regulation of metabolism in the heart. And as you mentioned it before, it is so far incompletely resolved which alterations in metabolism are for a good and for a bad purpose. I think an important take-home message is that the mitochondria and their Krebs cycle are not only used for energy provision, but also, as mentioned by RJ already, through the generation of aspartate and glutamine, potentially for the generation of amino acids that could be important in the context of hypertrophy development, but also for post-translational modifications through oligonucleation. And we know that these processes can take important steps in signal transduction of hypertrophy, but also of calcium handling in the cardiac myocytes. So we get important new insights and also an important difference between pressure and volume overload in these two models. And obviously, there are striking differences between these two stresses, which may be of clinical implications, because we do know that the heart tolerates volume overload for a certain time better than the pressure overload. So there are certainly also implications for the metabolic and structural remodeling in these two scenarios.
I mean, your interpretation is very interesting, but don't you think that over time, if this stress had been prolonged for, let's say, a month or so, ultimately the heart would have displayed metabolic alterations no matter what? I mean, in the hypertrophic as well as in the volume overload induced failure.
Regarding the volume overload, we need to take into account when looking at these data, and this is maybe a small limitation regarding the interpretation, that in the volume overload model, by creating a shunt between the aorta and the vena cava inferior, you unavoidably reduce the afterload of the heart while you increase the preload. So this could be one explanation why the changes in the volume overload are not as severe, but I would expect that if that condition lasts longer, that also further alterations in metabolism could occur. At least this is what previous study by the studies by the Hasenfuss lab have also shown together with Ajay, I think, that the longer the volume overload lasts, the more also there a maladaptive remodeling can take place.
I mean, you're both right. As we know, ultimately, almost any cause of heart failure eventually ends up in a similar phenotype. So I think the issue here really is to try and learn what we can from stages where the phenotypes are different. And so Fabio, even if ultimately volume overload would end up similar to very long-standing pressure overload, when we study it at this stage, we see some very clear differences, which make us question what exactly might be happening and what is cause and what is effect.
Yes, indeed. In fact, the pressure overload induced hypertrophy, probably because of this early occurrence of the metabolic alteration, may suggest that the alteration, this metabolic alteration per se, might contribute, right, to the progression of this hypertrophy and eventually failure.
Perhaps. I mean, I think we can't tell really from our study, but for us, one of the really interesting things was the evidence of de novo glutamine synthesis. If we consider that glutamine, in addition to oligonucleation peptides, actually is very, very important for glutathione, which is a major redox buffer in the tissue, and also for nucleotide synthesis, we might consider whether this increased synthesis is a compensatory response or is it a contributory response to the phenotype. You know, we might wonder whether it's actually a failed compensatory response, because an increase in glutathione generally would be expected to be good, but at the stage that we studied these hearts, the hearts were already beginning to fail. So that might be more in favor of a failed compensatory response.
Yeah, and I've discussed this upfront with Eduardo. So maybe Eduardo can add some points in terms of what are the upstream triggers that may initiate this. Eduardo, you wanna chip in here?
Yes, one of my questions was actually relating exactly to this point. Despite the vast literature on the topic, I think it remains really not clear what are the links between pressure overload and this rewiring of metabolism, which has been now widely documented, at least for what regards pressure overload. And it is even less investigated what happens during volume overload, because of course there is a different kind of mechanical stressors, and we now know a different kind of metabolic remodeling, right? So I was curious to know what are your comments on this point.
That's really the million-dollar question, isn't it? What is driving this change? And I really like the use of your word rewiring, because this is how we think about it. It's not just substrate utilization, which people have focused on, but it's actually a change in the way an individual substrate, in this case glucose, is used and goes through different pathways. So, you know, the short answer is this is one of the things that we, and maybe you, are trying to find out what are the actual mechanisms that drive it. But one of our ideas is that it's going to be driven by signaling. And we think that changes in redox signaling might be particularly important, because there is a very intricate relationship between changes in redox and changes in many of the enzymes that are involved in some of these metabolic pathways. So I think that's a really important area for further investigation.
Yeah, I would agree on that, Ajay. And that is particularly the point where we have been working on in the past, where we believe we understand how the increase in afterload, at least relatively quickly, changes the redox state in the mitochondria to a more oxidized environment that gives rise to oxidative stress. And there may also be a link to the previous findings that CAM kinase is more activated in the pressure than in the volume overloaded heart. And so CAM kinase by itself, with or without the interaction with HDAC4, could also impinge on a number of genes that are involved in metabolism. So do you have already any further, more precise information whether this particular pathway may be responsible for any of the changes in gene expression or protein expression that you have observed?
We haven't looked specifically at CAM kinase, but you know, along a similar line of thought, actually what we're focusing on is looking at flux through the different intermediary pathways. I mean, as you know, just looking at changes in gene expression or even protein levels doesn't really give us very much information about what is happening in a pathway. And that's one of the beauties of this method, because we could really try and infer flux through, for example, different branch pathways. So my guess would be that perhaps there are changes in some of the rate-limiting enzymes in some of these pathways, in glycolysis itself. But when we think about glutamine, you saw in the paper that we found some changes in glutamine synthetase, for example. So I think that the way we try to envisage it is changes in the activities of key rate-limiting enzymes, and maybe also some changes in allosteric regulation that lead to this rewiring.
What emerged from this conversation, and what is emerging right now from the literature, I think, is that there are many metabolic intermediates that in heart failure are possibly fueling into the synthesis of molecules like glutathione or protein to work as building blocks of the hypertrophic myocardium. And I think we as cardiologists should look to cancer metabolism in this respect, because it is already known since quite a long time that this sort of metabolic rewiring in cancer cells is driven by the environment and by the requirements that are imposed on cancer cells, which feeds to redox state and availability of nutrients even, but that ultimately are fueling the synthesis of macromolecule rather than ATP production, which is what we are always trying to interpret these changes with.
Totally agree with you. This is, pretty much our thinking as well. It brings us nicely into the question regarding therapeutic implications. So there isn't an immediate therapeutic implication, but I think instead of just thinking about ATP production, which is largely where the field has been, you know, which is the better substrate to use? Is it fatty acids or is it glucose? And should we try and switch? I think we perhaps need to look more carefully at what is the substrate being used for and what are the other consequences, for example, in epigenetic regulation or, you know, metabolite-related signaling. So the therapeutic implication might be that these are some of the pathways we might have to try and manipulate rather than just focusing on energy. That would be my speculation.
Thank you, AJ. Thank you, Christoph and Eduardo, for this insightful discussion. Cara?
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes.